All right. Next, we have hypoventilation. Now, hypoventilation is not related to necessarily either the rate or the depth, but it's what we call minute volume. Now, how do we measure how much blood comes out of the heart? How do we calculate how much blood comes out of the heart? Cardiac output equals blank times blank. What's it called every time the heart squeezes, how much blood comes out? In one stroke. What's the amount of blood that one squeeze produces? Stroke volume. Now we multiply stroke volume by the number of squeezes in a minute, also known as the What I want you to do is I want you to leave the classroom and come back in with the brain turned on. So, in order to calculate cardiac output, number of squeezes in 1 minute is called... The number of squeezes in 1 minute. Heart rate. Yes, thank you. That was tough. So, we take the amount of blood squeezed, multiply it by the heart rate, and we get cardiac output. To get respiratory output, we take the number of breaths in 1 minute, multiply it by the how much air goes in and out of the lungs on a normal breath. What's that called? Tidal volume. So we take the number of breaths per minute, multiply it by tidal volume, and that gives us the amount of air that's moved in 1 minute. That's called, interestingly enough, the minute volume. So, if the minute volume is so low that a person is holding on to carbon dioxide, that's called hypoventilation. Now, PaCO2 greater than 45. What's the normal values for arterial carbon dioxide pressure? 35 to 45. So anything higher than 45 is called respiratory acidosis or hypercapnia. Now, it's easy to overlook because it causes our patient to become calm and quiet and go to sleep. And we like that. How's he doing? Oh, he hasn't bothered me all day. He's a great patient. Yeah. So, some causes, or it causes. Respiratory acidosis or hypercapnia causes somnolence. What is somnolence?
Very sleepy and tired. I just can't stay awake. I'm sorry.
It's what many of you are at this very moment. Disorientation. Who am I? Where am I? Who are you? What are you doing here? And then it can also cause secondary hypoxemia because it decreases the drive to breathe. Oxygen will then become low. So this is very easy to overlook because it causes our patient to become calm. And we like that because then they don't bother us. Now, hyperventilation, on the other hand, is going to cause hypocapnia, which is PaCO2 of less than 35. When you already learned that and took a midterm on it even. So that will lead to respiratory alkalosis. Now, this hypercapnia causes these things to happen. Hypocapnia is caused by anxiety, head injuries, and inadequate oxygenation. So if you're not getting enough oxygen, you will breathe more. All right, next.
So the little thing that you put on your finger, does that actually, is that what measures the tidal volume?
No, it measures.
What device does that?
You have to have a monitor that would actually measure the amount of air coming in and out. We usually don't do that.
No.
Yeah, you'd actually have to hook their mouth up to a tube and capture the amount of air. So it's usually only done in research.
Okay. So we're just waiting
for time. Right. Yeah. So, but the thing you put on the finger, that measures hemoglobin saturation. All right. Cough. Physiologic reflex. Is it a good thing to cough? Yes, there's a purpose behind it. And that purpose is to get nasty stuff out. Most coughs are initiated in the larynx and bronchotracheal tree. And what's the part of the bronchotracheal tree that is most responsible for coughs? The carina. So there's mechanical and chemical stimulants or irritants can both cause coughs. Now, in addition to the coughs that are generated by your larynx and by your bronchial tree, we also have coughs that are initiated in the stomach, in the external auditory canal in your ear. Some people, when they clean their ears with Q-tips, makes them cough. The pericardium, the heart, can actually cause a person to cough, and the pleura can cause a person to cough. Kind of really weird that you can eat something and it would make you cough. But that's how it is. Acute coughs resolve within 2 to 3 weeks. Most common causes are upper respiratory infections, URIs, allergic rhinitis, acute bronchitis, pneumonia, heart failure, pulmonary embolus, and aspiration. So if it goes away within 2 to 3 weeks, it's considered an acute cough. If it lasts longer than 3 weeks, some sources say 7 to 8 weeks, then it's considered a chronic cough. So some causes of chronic cough, post-nasal drip. What's post-nasal drip? So when you have a runny nose, but instead of dripping out your nose, it drains down the back of the throat. Now, it's very common. I'll see a patient in the clinic, and I'll ask them, do you have post-nasal drip? And they go, no.
Are you taking any drugs?
Yeah. So a lot of people have it, and they just don't realize it. Asthma. GERD. What is GERD? Gastroesophageal reflux disease, so it's heartburn. And so if you're having stomach fluids that are coming back up the esophagus, especially at night, those can drain down into the through the epiglottis into the trachea and cause cough. Smokes, number one cause of chronic cough probably in this country, although the liberals are doing everything possible to stop that. Yeah. Liberals are anti-freedom. It's really bizarre that I, who hate smoking, would be on the side of smokers because, if you want to outlaw smoking, then just go ahead and do it. But what they're trying to do is, it's okay to smoke, you just can't smoke anywhere. Can't smoke in your own house now, in some places.
Really?
Yeah.
What would they do if you smoked in your house?
They give you a ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever read a book called 1984?
Yeah.
People will tell on you. Your kids will tell on you. Yeah. Oh, nowadays, if you, there is a recommendation by the American Academy of Pediatricians where when a kid goes to see the pediatrician, the pediatrician is supposed to ask the child, does your mommy and daddy smoke? And they're supposed to ask them, does your mommy and daddy have a gun? And then, and then the pediatrician is supposed to refer the family to the appropriate sociological support services. Yeah. Now, it's one thing when what we're asking about is illegal. But it's another thing when what we're asking about is legal. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Then we have cancer. And then this right here, ACE-I, stands for ACE inhibitors. It's a drug that we'll learn about next semester. All right, next we have hemoptysis, coughing up blood. So if it's bloody... bright red or pink is usually alkaline pH. Now, when we say coughing up blood, why would we want to do the pH? Why would we want to take its pH?
Because
If someone look, blood. Why would we want to take its pH? Right, because there's a chance maybe it wasn't really coughed up, maybe it was thrown up. And so if it's been thrown up, what would the pH be? It would be slightly acidic, or a lot acidic. In the case of coughed up blood, it should be slightly alkaline. So that's why you might want to take its pH. If it's frothy, what might that be a sign of? Pulmonary edema. All right, etiology, we have bronchiectasis, which is a disease of the bronchi we'll learn about in a little bit. Lung cancers, bronchitis, pneumonia, and the number one cause worldwide, everyone's favorite, tuberculosis. So the two things we want to know about it are the amount and the onset. Now, in the United States, if a person is coughing up blood, what are we going to do to that person? We're going to put them in an isolation room until we make sure they don't have tuberculosis. Now, they're not going to transmit lung cancer or pneumonia. Well, in the pneumonia they could transmit, but they're not going to transmit lung cancer. But they could very well transmit tuberculosis to all of the healthcare workers around them and their own family. And so put them in an isolation room until we make sure they don't have tuberculosis. All right, cyanosis, turning bluish colored. Most easily seen in the lips, because the skin is thinner there. It's desaturation of 5 grams of hemoglobin. Causes are decreased arterial oxygenation. We call a right-to-left shunt, which is where blood returns to the heart unoxygenated, and decreased cardiac output and cold environments. So this is primarily with little kids, like when you go to the beach and they're like all cold because the water's like 74 degrees. That's not that cold. In New Jersey, it's like 50 degrees. I do not understand how anyone goes to the beach up north. I mean, that's just crazy. And anxiety. All right, in adults, it's usually not evident until extreme hypoxemia. So in adults, this is a very bad sign. If an adult is cyanotic, they're in deep doo-doo. You've waited too long. You're a bad nurse. Bad. So you do not want to see cyanosis in an adult ever. It means that you have not done a good enough job. So it's going to start. Typically, you're going to see it in the lips first. You can also see it in the buccal mucosa on the inside of a person's mouth and in their nail beds. We'll do pain, and then we're going to stop there for lunch. So pain. We have 3 different types of chest pains that are associated with lungs. First one is called pleural or pleuritic pain, which is a very sharp pain on inspiration. The person goes, ooh, it hurts right there. And it's very easily localized. They can point exactly to where it hurts. What's it a sign of? Pleural inflammation. Now, I guarantee you that you will have a test question on the midterm, on the final, that's going to ask you about one of these pains. It'll say your patient has blah, blah, blah symptoms. Which of these pains is it? So it'll help you to know what they are. It's also present in pulmonary infarction due to pulmonary embolism. Remember, infarction means cell death. Then we have pulmonary pain, which is a central chest pain. So how many of you ever had like a really bad bronchitis or cold where you're just coughing and coughing, and you cough so much when you're done coughing it was just like burned in the middle of your chest? That's what we're talking about by pulmonary pain. It's also caused by pulmonary hypertension. And then the last one is chest wall pain. Chest wall pain is actually rib and muscle pain, and it typically will only hurt when the person's breathing, but it could hurt on both expiration and inspiration or on only one or the other. It can mimic pleural pain, but one of the things that will typically happen is the chest wall pain, if you push on it, it'll be tender. Whereas with pleuritic pain, it doesn't hurt when you push on it. All right, any questions?